Welcome to Make Your Wealth Work, a practical show for builders, entrepreneurs, and anyone who wants to think like one. I'm Jason K. Powers here with Joe Pantozzi. Today we are asking three questions that really change how you handle money. It's where does the dollar live? Who controls it? And we're throwing in a third one, can it keep growing while you use it? We're going to show you how this lens ties directly to being your own banker, so your dollars work on purpose instead of getting stuck. So let's get into it. Joe, how you doing today?
Jason, I'm doing great. Good to be with you, man.
How's the week been? I hear you guys got a little bit of weather out there. You keep stacking up that snow, don't you?
Yeah, and I keep on stacking up layers.
That's right.
Just put on more layers and stay indoors.
Winter is here. Joe, can you believe this is episode number 60?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That either means I talk too much or there's a lot to talk about, a lot of benefit to be derived, and really a lot of value out there. And my concern is always that so many people are continuing to do what they've been doing because they really can feel no other alternative. They feel like they have no other choice but to keep on doing what they've been doing. So they feel stuck. They feel stuck. They in their deepest part of their heart, they know that they are stuck. And maybe they can't get over the hump of understanding that, yeah, this is something I could do if I put my mind and my heart and my soul into it. And in order to do that, in order to make that decision, you have to believe that it's worth it.
Sure. So many people don't know what they don't know, right? And we have to, I think in the don't know what we don't know, then we default to what's the general consensus? What's the general public? What's the, you know, what is everybody else doing? And let me just do that. And that's a method in getting through life, but not always the best one.
And there's no doubt about this. Sometimes I give this a little bit too little credit. It takes a level of discomfort in order to make changes in your life. You have to become comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You have to get to the point where you are sick and tired of where you're at. And this happened to me. My wife and I met 38 years ago. God bless her. Mm-hmm. She's an amazing woman. And 38 years ago, in 1988, we both had made misguided choices, unwise choices. Sometimes we had been led down a path. We lost money. And we made a decision. We're going to do things differently going forward. We're going to put ourselves first. We're not going to put any creditor before us. And we put God first in our giving. After him on the earth, we are number one. Pay yourself first. I mean, I learned that 50 years ago in this business. And it's a truth. It's a cliche for some people. It's a cliche when you don't practice it. When you practice it, it's a life principle. But it only works if you practice it.
That's right. Well, and I want to dive into these questions and talk about the areas. You know, first, let's go through them, Joe, and talk about what areas are people doing this with their money. So, you know, the first one we asked was, where does this dollar live? And I'll throw out the most obvious one. Everybody would go, okay, well, we put our money in the banks. That's the easy one, right? We put our money in the banks.
Uh-huh.
You know, another complicated one potentially is we let our dollars live in retirement plans, qualified retirement accounts. And that's maybe the second most common one to banks. What else? Business accounts. I know people. We let our dollars live under the mattress sometimes. And we say that and people laugh. And I'm like, no, I've met people.
I had a friend who was in his mid-50s and he passed away obviously early. We went to his house to secure his assets so they could be preserved for his family. So the house, which was now vacant, wouldn't be wouldn't be broken into and have his safe stolen in full. And we opened up the safe with his daughter there, and there was over $100,000 in currency.
Wild.
Not to mention guns and numismatic gold coins, but he believed in possessing his money physically and didn't take into consideration the degradation of your money because of inflation. Purchasing power goes down every year. You just let it sit there in a box or in a safe or in a mattress.
Sure.
The biggest area that I have to throw in, where does your money live? It lives in somebody else's pocket because I can't seem to hold on to it. And whatever amount I earn, I always seem to be spending 5 or 10 or 15 or 20% more than I earn because my lifestyle demands it. Well, my lifestyle demands it because it's the lifestyle I've chosen. And I'm not here to tell anybody how to live. I'm not here to tell anybody they need to live frugally. I'm just saying, if you want to have anything for the future, if you want to build any real wealth, it's not going to be inside a savings account in a bank earning 1%. That's not going to happen. I don't have any clients who have become wealthy by saving money in a bank and letting it sit, believing that compound interest is an ideal end result.
Sure, sure. Where else are people storing their money, Joe?
They're storing their money in lenders' accounts, in credit card balances. They're building up negative equity.
That's right.
They're spending cash because they believe that they should, because some financial entertainer told them that they should pay cash for everything. Well, that's only part of the actual process to build wealth. You pay cash, but you pay back your savings vehicle, your capital account, where that cash was removed. But most people don't take cash out of savings. They take cash out of their future paychecks. So they're encumbering or pledging or leaning their future earnings, not realizing that the interest rate that they're paying on credit cards is so outrageous, they're never going to be able to pay that debt down. So where does the money reside? They're literally handing their paychecks over to lenders. So we call it toxic debt. And of course, they'll do that because they feel like there's no other choice.
Right. Right. I think people also put their money into, one example would be life insurance policies, whole life insurance policies, and utilizing the cash value.
What a concept.
And that's right. I think my favorite one, as we were going through our list, and you mentioned it, Joe, is nowhere. You know, and that happens so much. Where does the dollar live? People are like, nowhere, man. It's in one hand and out the other. Matter of fact, it's gone before it even hits my hand, you know, and that's a big one for people. I think the important thing, though, is, you know, every location, no matter what it is, good or bad, every location really has its rules, risks, timing issues, its opportunities. And you have to really look at what are all my options, or try to expand your mind, if you will, to see that you do have more than one option. You do have more than two options. You can make different choices if you want to make that dollar live somewhere else. Or you can rest assured that your dollar is living in the right places.
And, you know, I have to say that if you're part of the majority of people whose money is residing nowhere, mm-hmm. It's a terrible way to explain it. It's terrible English, but I think you get it. You're in the majority. You're in a group of people, human beings, who have just gone through life, and life happens, right? That's the issue. You're not alone. I want to make that really strong point. You're not alone. And the thing is, people get so tied up and knotted up in embarrassment because they're not today where they think they should have been by now. Okay, then we just have to deal with that. It is what it is. You've made some uninformed choices. You've probably been sold a bill of goods by somebody whose interest was to get your money. And you got disappointed, and now you're a little bit stuck. you're underwater, you're in debt, you're living paycheck to paycheck. You know what? We're the vast majority of people are in that situation, and you can get out. There is hope, and it's not a matter of eating the elephant, right? It's a matter of one little correct choice for you at a time. You don't need to take the burden of a year's worth of work just today. Just work on the steps that you could take today. Take one small step today.
That's right. So we know where we're putting our money. Where does the dollar live? Let's change that perspective a little bit. Take it one step further and talk about who controls that dollar. You know, we talk about where do we warehouse our wealth, might be a term that we use. Where do we warehouse it? But who's really in control? You can be in control of your own money. Certainly, that's the easy answer. Well, I'm in control. But I want people to think about where you park your money. Do you actually have control of that money like you think you do? Employer-sponsored plans, for example, retirement accounts, qualified accounts is another place you put your money. The employer plan is what controls your money, really, whatever that is in. A lender might be a different one. That's a big one. Expand it. Let's call it the bank. The lender controls your money. If you've got your money tied up in debt vehicles of various and sundry forms.
And I always throw the word in just to make it sting just a little bit. You got to call it toxic debt.
Sure.
Because for the most part, people aren't out there using credit cards that are charging 5-6%. They're using credit cards that are charging 15-20-25-30%. And they're doing it, why? Because they feel they have no other choice. Now, you know, that you may say, this is your opinion, this is your philosophy. You don't think that 401ks are the greatest thing since God created little green apples.
Right.
No, I don't. But I could also give you the mathematical reasons, the economic reasons. And if you believe that you build wealth by having control, then you would have to chalk up the elements of a retirement plan and say, well, do I have control? Do I have any assurance that I'll be in a lower tax bracket, which these salesmen have been selling for decades? You'll be in a lower tax bracket when you retire. Therefore, you'll pay less tax. Number one, there's two problems with that. Number one, there's no guarantee that you'll be in a lower tax bracket because your tax bracket is determined by the government, not by you. And there is proof of it right now is they're floating a bill in California to tax wealth, not income. They're looking at a billionaire tax, a tax on wealth. They're talking about taxing unrealized appreciation in stocks, unrealized equity in companies. Their expectation is they're going to have billionaires write checks for hundreds of millions of dollars on with liquidity that they don't own.
Right.
So is my 401k guaranteed to beat inflation by the time I get there? There's no guarantee. Is there a guarantee the market will outperform inflation? No guarantee. Is there a guarantee that I won't use to rifle into that account and borrow the money out like 45% of Americans have already done? They have loans against their 401k. Where are we going with that?
Yeah.
Is there a guarantee that my money manager who's got my 401k will be my money manager in 10 years or 20 years? No guarantee of that. So two things. One is, will I be in a lower tax bracket? No guarantee. Will inflation beat up my 401k? No guarantee. Will I have an absolute critical mass of dollars that I expect to have by retirement? No guarantee. Is there a guarantee my employer will continue the match? No. Mm-hmm. So in so many other areas, folks want to have a measured set of facts before they can make a choice on buying something or investing in something or owning an asset. But when it comes to 401k, people are putting money into an unknown. Mm-hmm. And then the maybe equivalent problem or a bigger problem is they're putting so much money in the 401k that they're forgetting that they need cash reserves to live their current lifestyle. And so they're having to borrow money on expensive toxic credit cards. And so when you look at the math of it, it's upside down. What if you're earning 8% on your 401k? I'm not saying that you will or you won't. What if you're earning 8% on your 401k, but you're paying 28% in your credit card? You need to do the math. Most people don't want to do the math. They're afraid to do the math. They just keep on making the same decisions day by day, hoping it will work out.
Right.
I don't have a negative attitude around retirement plans, do I? I'm not.
Well, and that's another parallel example is just traditional investments. You know, forget your 401k for a minute. A lot of people like to get into the stock market, you know, and, but I think the important distinction that we're making is the vehicles you put your money in, do you actually have control over it like you initially think you do? You don't have any control over what the stock market does. You don't have any control over what your employer ultimately chooses to do. What if you lose your job and now you've, I know a lot of people, you've got these piles of 401k plans sitting out there from all their jobs over the years. You know, there's like 6 or 8 or 10 of them sitting around there with little piles of money in them. Because it's just, you feel like it's just stuck there because you changed jobs, et cetera. So, but even traditional investments. So we're not sitting here saying all of this stuff is bad. We're sitting here saying, understand who actually has control of your money. Because you may not have control like you think you do of your own dollar. And if you think you have control of it and you're constantly putting your dollar into this whatever vehicle, under the assumption you have full control over it and you've never really put any thought into it, oh, I actually don't. I'm completely, entirely at the mercy of what the markets do, or completely, entirely at the mercy of if that bank is going to call that loan or raise my interest rate or dot, dot, dot. And I think that's just the important step is to understand where am I putting my money? Where do my dollars get stored? And who has control of that dollar? And understanding those things, I think you will be able to make some critical, important decisions in your financial well-being moving forward.
You know, what I think as I replayed the last few minutes that we've been talking, what we're really talking around is the fact that you have a plan.
Oh, yeah.
And many people don't have a plan. And by the way, I hate the word plan because a plan kind of has the implication that we're going to get into a rut and we're going to stay in that rut for the next 50 miles. That's not what I mean. I mean, there has to be some logic to the decisions that you're making. You can't make your financial decisions haphazardly or just shoot from the hip all the time, number one. Number two, there really does need to be some balance. And we talk about building, and we call it a pyramid or a building. There has to be a foundation. And the foundation has to be protection, right? Nobody in their right mind would think about getting in their car without having car insurance, protecting the occupants of the car and protecting the car itself. Nobody would drive around without liability insurance in their car, right? Nobody would own a home without having homeowners insurance. Most people want to have medical insurance, for example. That's all the foundation of your financial house. The foundation has to be at the bottom. You can't decide to do it later. Your foundation has to be protection. Life insurance, all those insurances. Some people like Aflac or accident insurance, which I think is crazy. Not a great idea, right? But life insurance of some kind, forget about whether it's whole life or term or universal. You got to have some. I'd rather die with some life insurance. I'd rather die with the wrong kind of life insurance than with none, okay? Because if I die with insurance, it's going to pay, right? So the foundation has to be there. It's got to be protection. The next level is savings. The next level above that is growth, and it has to be in that order. I mean, you could disagree with me. You could tell me, well, I bought Apple stock in 1979, and I'm a billion. Okay, I'm not talking to you, right? I'm not talking about the one-off where you made millions of dollars on a stock. I'm saying you have to have a systematic methodology of saving. And I hate systematic, and I hate methodology, and I hate saving over years, and I hate discipline, right? But I also hate poverty.
Yeah.
Right? I have to eat with some discipline. I really want to eat the whole bag of M&Ms because I love them. Mm-hmm. But I try to limit myself to 10 or 20. And even that's a lot for some people. But there's got to be some discipline at some point, right? And saving is the worst discipline imaginable because you're saving long term. But you're either going to run your financial life based on a foundation. For me, that foundation is saving. Or you're going to run your financial life haphazardly, shooting from the hip, and just live on credit cards. There really isn't much of an in-between. And I'm using radical examples here, radical extremes, because I'm trying to reach out to the few people who would be willing to listen and say, you know what? I am sick and tired. I'm sick and tired of getting the same result that I've been getting using the same old habits that don't work. They work. You know what they work for? They work for everybody else. They're making your lenders rich. They're making Visa and MasterCard a $1 trillion company, right? You keep on placing your money with other people, with toxic lenders. They're getting rich on you. How much more boldly can I say it? Other people are getting rich because you're working hard. Why not put yourself at the top of the pyramid here and say, I'm going to pay myself first, no matter what. Now, becoming my own banker is a mindset. And we can talk about all the various ways that you can become your own banker. I've been practicing private family banking in my own life since 1976 when I learned the use of Whole Life. And it works. And there's no one that's going to argue that it doesn't work because scientifically, mathematically, economically, it works. That's not even up for discussion. There are talking heads out there who will say it's stupid. Stupid is not mathematically measurable. Okay.
Yeah.
But we can show you where it's mathematically measurable. We're not even getting there. I want to put you on the road to start understanding your finances and understanding that until you take control of all the financial elements of your life, you're not going to even begin to build wealth.
Yeah. And that starts with just understanding. And I think that's why we are asking these kinds of questions, to get your wheels turning in your head going, hey, where does my dollar live? You know, and understand your options, who controls it? You know, and we brought up this third question kind of in lieu of this conversation right now, as you hear Joe talk about, is it growing? I think is the general question. Is that money growing? Is it doing anything besides just sitting there collecting dust? Is it growing? Because that's the previous examples we're looking at here going, you want to park, if you're putting your money into something, I think generally you want to say, is it growing? But we're taking it one step further and saying, can it keep growing even while you use it? And what does that mean? What does that mean? We would say uninterrupted growth might be a different way to phrase that. Do you have the capability of uninterrupted growth of some kind? And I think that's an important distinction, you know, that we're going to kind of talk about here, is just what is this uninterrupted growth, uninterrupted compounding versus, say, a start and stop saving approach?
So I have to add a little bit of a proviso here when we talk about, is it growing? You can create growth in multiple ways. And I'll use real estate as an example because I think it's the most common example to all of our clients. The vast majority of our clients are homeowners. Now, when let's say that I buy a house today and I buy a $300,000 house, and I put a modest down payment down. I put 10%, $30,000. Many people put more. Many people put less. Let's say I put 10% down. Am I expecting a rate of return on my house the day after I close? Absolutely not. if I bought the house at $300,000 and put $30,000 down, I really hope that that $30,000 is going to represent equity, represent appreciation. By the way, they're two different things. Okay. Mm-hmm. Get that into another class, right? People assume and they hope their house is going to appreciate. Absolutely. Do I believe that real estate appreciates over time? Yes. Over decades? Yes. This year to next year? No idea. Right? So when people buy a house, they don't say, well, I better get a rate of return. No, no, no. Not only did you pay commissions, you're paying real estate taxes, you're paying insurance, you're paying for repairs, you're paying for hazards that could happen, a tree falls on your house or whatever, hazard claims, things could happen. You could live in a neighborhood that winds up depreciating. They put a freeway too close to your house or whatever. They're unforeseen things that could happen. But when you move in that house, you don't move in that house primarily because you think you're going to get growth or appreciation in the house. You're buying that house because you're going to raise your family there. You're going to live there for the next 30 years. Or maybe you're just going to move in for a few years and flip it. If you're buying it to flip it, that's another conversation. I have clients who are real estate owners who have multiple rentals for the purpose of building up income. If you're going to be a homeowner, if you're going to be a landowner or a person who rents out to tenants and you own one or two homes, you are going to be unhappy because you're trying to squeeze out too much profit on too small a portfolio. Right? Yep. Different conversation. Yep. But the point I'm trying to make here is that when people move into a home, their primary objective is not building rate of return. And rate of return or growth could be in something that's emotional. I'm happy here because I love the environment. I love the neighborhood. I love the access to schools. I love that it's a half a block away from a lake or a park or my favorite tennis court or my best charter school or whatever, right? I'm building up value in more things than just dollars and cents. And that's also part of multitasking, right? So my life insurance, for example, there's 20 different things while I'm building it, while I'm saving, while I'm funding it over a long period of time. And again, I'm going to go back and say, infinite banking is a mindset. Infinite banking is not a life insurance policy. They're not one the same. One is a strategy and a mindset and a philosophy and a lifestyle, and the type of policy you put into there is completely different and according to individual choice.
Well, and I think that's a distinction we can make for listeners is we've kind of alluded to it here and there. Now Joe has used the actual term, you know, the infinite banking concept. You know, and if you're listening to this for the first time, you're like, well, what is that? So it's, in short, it's a concept. The infinite banking concept is about controlling the banking function in your life. How do we reposition ourselves to actually be in control of our money? And you've heard us talk about of the various options. Where does the dollar live? One place the dollar can live is properly structured whole life insurance policies. That's one place. There's a lot of places a dollar can live. But it has its advantages to do that. And who controls it, you have more control over it there than many, 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 many other places. And how does it grow? We could spend 6 episodes on that, really. But how it grows is, that's why we ask that question. Like, you can put money into most any growth vehicle. Let's just keep it simple and talk about a savings account. Let's say you've got a high yield savings account. 6% it was. Now it's not anymore. But we rode the wave, right? 6% high yield savings account. And let's say you've saved up, accumulated $50,000 in there, and emergency comes up. You need to take $20,000 out and take care of emergency. And now what is that 6% growing on in your savings account? It's growing on the $30,000 you left in there, correct? Everybody understands that. because I took 20 out. So it's now only growing on 30, not the 50. Inside of a properly structured whole life insurance policy, if you have 50,000 in cash value accumulated in there, emergency comes up and you take 20 out, it's growing as if the whole 50 is still sitting there. That's the uninterrupted compounding growth.
And just to be clear, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah.
I want to be clear and technically correct when we say you're taking money out. You're not taking money out. You're using life insurance as an asset, as collateral, and you're borrowing from the insurance company.
Yeah.
They're lending you their money at an interest rate, and that's why you're paying an interest rate, is because they're lending you their money at the most reasonable rate imaginable.
Right.
On a new policy, 4% interest only. As long as you want it, you can keep that interest rate for life if you want to, but you're borrowing against the policy. So when you take a loan, your money stays in your policy, your money continues to compound while you access the insurance company's money using your policy as collateral. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
You borrow against that cash value and utilize it, and it's growing as if the money never left. And there's just not another vehicle out there like that. Okay, now conceptually think about this. Now I've lost my train of thought. Okay, if emergency comes up and you take the $20,000 out of your savings account, generally speaking, okay, thank God you had it. What's the very next thing we do? Once situation has been resolved, what's the very next thing we try to do? We usually try to start backfilling our savings account. So what have we done? We've effectively borrowed against ourselves and we're paying ourselves back in our savings account. Then we're saying, hey, what would that look like inside of a properly structured whole life insurance policy? Borrow against your cash value and then pay yourself back. And there's where we get this term we start using, becoming your own banker. And now you're banking with yourself, right? You're borrowing against yourself and paying yourself back in effect. And that is where you start to have more control as you see that unfold. So we talk about this. This is one vehicle of many, right? People are putting their dollars into various and sundry different places. And I just want you to think about, when you're putting your dollar there, do you want control over it? Maybe that's the question. Do I even want control of it? Do you even care? If you don't care, then okay, that's your prerogative. But if you do care, if you didn't realize, if you've never thought about how much control you don't have putting it in some of these vehicles, maybe that triggers a change in behavior. Because now you know, you're like, okay, well, now I wanted control. But I realize now that I don't have as much control as I did. Okay. Now, again, I think we're not saying don't put your money in any other vehicle. We're not saying that. Again, the infinite banking concept, the concept itself is about how do I have a lifestyle of putting my money in places I have control over? When I'm making financial decisions, how much control am I losing by doing this? And is it going to hurt me in the long run?
So let me bring up a comparison that Jason just outlined. You can borrow against your life insurance policy. You could borrow against your savings account at the bank. Now, there are more similarities than there are differences in those two processes, those two choices. But when I borrow against my life insurance policy, I have made a conscious decision that I'm going to pay it back. So first of all, having a life insurance policy or having a savings account requires discipline. If I'm going to put $1,000 a month into a savings account every month for the next 10 years, right, I'm going to have $120,000 in my savings account plus interest. Let's just call it 100 grand, right? When I take money out of a savings account, which is what I'm doing, and I'm not borrowing against it typically, do I commit that I'm going to make the payments back to myself with interest? The answer is a resounding no. What I do have is an intention. Well, I took the money out of my savings account and I have to pay it back. I'm going to pay it back. As soon as I get that bonus, as soon as I get that tax refund, God forbid, as soon as I have changed my job, as soon as I have an increase in my revenue, I'm going to pay that thing back. I'm going to pay it back in spades. I'm going to pay it back plus interest. You know, what's human nature say? If I negotiate a car loan and I have a new car or used car and I have a car payment, I make that payment monthly, month after month with discipline. Why? Because I don't want them taking the car back. I don't want to lose my car. But also because I have integrity. I'm going to pay my debts. I agreed to take a loan. I agree to pay it back. That's what we do as good people with integrity. We agree to pay our lenders back. But does that same discipline apply? We borrow from ourselves? I'm telling you, it doesn't. And so whether you take a life insurance loan, which in essence is paying back against your own asset, your own collateral, or whether you take money out of your savings account, it's going to require discipline. So long-term, if you want to build wealth, you have to have discipline. We are not shortcutting the requirement for discipline by suggesting that you use option A or option B. And another thing I'll end with this is when you're going to make a financial decision, you might want to ask yourself, by making this financial choice, no matter what it is, investment, savings, new business, particular transaction, am I more in control of the banking function with what I'm about to do, or am I going to be less in control of the banking function? And we can talk through those types of mindsets and conversations with you so that you can get used to controlling your future, controlling your outcomes, controlling your wealth, building freedom.
And I think that's probably a good way to wrap up this episode, Joe. I think I want people to understand your options. You know, we talked early on, you don't know what you don't know. And maybe you're sitting here listening today going, well, I never really thought about it that way. You know, let's talk through it. Get on a call with Joe, get on a call with myself, and we'll just talk through it. We don't have a primary agenda for you. We don't know you. We don't know your money situation. Let's talk through it. Let's unpack it and help you navigate that kind of thing and educate. You need to make some informed decisions with your dollars these days and educate. And we have certainly talked about this term, the infinite banking concept. There's a great book out there if you're a reader, by R. Nelson Nash, called Becoming Your Own Banker. That is a wonderful place to start. It is the place to start in the infinite banking concept understanding. And call us and let's talk through it. You know, I think there's so many choices out there for people. And we can be overwhelmed with choices. Or another perspective is also there's so many holes we've dug ourselves into and we feel like we can't get out. We feel like there's no end to it. Or we're ashamed, like Joe talked about. We're ashamed of this big, huge hole we have dug for ourselves. So we don't want to share that with people. Hmm. You know, I have sat with people in wild amount of debt. And it's okay. We will figure it out. We'll walk alongside you and help you figure it out. If you're ready to make that change, if you're ready to make those different choices and stop letting money burn holes in your pocket. And we'll get you there. Anything else you want to tack on, Joe?
It's all good. This is a collaboration. We're not telling clients what to do. We're walking alongside you, and we're going to walk a path that, for a lot of us, we've actually walked this path. I'm not a salesman trying to sell something that I don't own.
Yeah,
I've used this process for many years, even before meeting Nelson. What Nelson did was explode it for me and make it so real. He actually multiplied my wealth by introducing the ideas and the thought process that he did. So we'd like to help. I'm passionate. I'm hurt when people feel like they don't have choices except to give their control to somebody else. And I want to help people get that control back.
That's right. Well, today we covered three questions to ask before any money move, really. Where does this dollar live? Who controls it? And can it keep growing while you use it? Or how is it growing? If you want help applying this lens to your cash flow, head on over to alphaomegawealth.com/podcast. and book a call with Joe, book a call with myself, and follow or subscribe. In the meantime, share this with one person who needs to hear about this episode. Leave us a good review on any of your streaming platforms as you see it, and share again with people. Let's get the word out that you have choices. All right, this is Make Your Wealth Work, and we will see you guys next time.
Good day.